Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Oh, hey, love your shoes. If you're hearing this, this is your sign to try those on. Trust us, you can totally pull them off. In fact, try on every shoe here if you want. We won't stop you. In our house, you've got unlimited freedom to play. And hey, fall is the perfect season to do, wear, be whatever you want. And with tons of shoes that get you at prices that get your budget, we'll give you something to brag about. So go ahead, try them on. Let us surprise you.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Telling the existing team in the spring, at the last spring practice, that I was stepping down. The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. But I knew it was the right time and the right thing to do, but was still the hardest. You know, I didn't get through my... bawling my eyes out for the most part. But that was the hardest thing to walk away. But you got to know when to walk away and when to do the right thing.
And our guest this week, Jay Accorsi, who was one of the most well-regarded head football coaches in local college football, spent 22 years leading Division III Rowan University down in Glassboro before he decided to retire after the 2023 season. And Jay, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Oh, it's a pleasure. You gave me something to wake up for today.
So that leads into my first question. How is retirement? It seems like it's treating you very, very well.
Yes, it is. I think for a lot of reasons, it was just a great time to do it, you know, and to be reconnecting with my wife. You know, we'll see how that goes. And my own three kids and watching my son play his last year of college soccer for me. That's just been such a pleasure. But it's going well. And, I think sometimes when the right time is, and for me, it was the right time to move on to the next chapter and reconnect with a family that, I wasn't around for as much as a lot of college coaches can say. But life's good.
So talk to me about the decision. It sounds like this was something that you kind of were pointing towards and, all right, that's going to be the exit ramp. Like, this was not something that you just woke up one day and decided, I think I'm done.
No, I think my wife and I had had some discussions the last several years. You know, I know when the reorganization of the men's basketball program and Joe Crispin took over for Joe Cassidy and their roles reversed. It kind of opened my eyes a little bit that maybe Rowan was changing a little bit in terms of their direction. I remember joking with the AD at the time right afterwards, like, are we reorganizing the football program? Are you going to tell me that as jest? But, you know, that kind of started it from an institutional standpoint. And then I think COVID, there was a buyout for state employees and, you know, one of our longtime assistants, Tom Dotti, took a buyout and left. And I had thought about it at that time with the incentive of the buyout. But I thought it was important to rebuild the program back from COVID. So, you know, my wife and I had some discussions over the years. And then I think it got more serious during COVID. And then we kind of came to the conclusion last year during the fall, midway through, with some discussions she and I had that, you know, now was the right time. And the impetus was really my son playing his fifth year of, you know, college soccer at Stevenson to finally be a dad for my own kids. That was really important to me. And that was kind of in the back of my mind if he was going to play that extra fifth year. you know, could I go out and be able to, you know, see him play? And that's kind of what we decided. So midway through last fall, we had made a decision as a family, and then we pulled the kids in and then told them. They were at our last home game, a nice win against William Patterson. Didn't really want to tell anybody. I'm not a person by nature that's very egotistical, and it's never been about me. So my goal was always just kind of slip out through the back door. And that's, you know, kind of how I was able to do it and make the decision during spring ball to tell the team the last spring practice, tell the coaches that day. I know, you know, you're kind of here and there because of their lives and their careers. But I, for once, just want to do something the way I wanted to do it for a change, and just kind of slip out the back door and without any fanfare and just go off. And, you know, fortunately for us, that's what, you know, we were able to do and I was able to do.
What was the late summer, early fall like for you this year, not having that grind that has become reflexive for so much of your life? Was it weird, or was it just, oh, that's nice? Yeah, it's kind of nice to not be up at 4 a.m. and getting ready for practice.
Yeah, it was different. And again, I have to go back to COVID, you know, because small college football didn't occur in 2020. So I had a taste of it then, and did a lot of different things in terms of feeding families and, you know, food insecurities and doing a lot of kind of outside things. But that kind of gave me the first glimpse of what it's going to be like. And I was like, wow, this is kind of nice. I'm not up worrying 24/7 about everything. And, you know, my stomach didn't have that acid feeling in it all the time. And so I knew it would be nice. So we transitioned out of spring ball through the summer, you know, and then training camp came in August, and my body was kind of getting ready for it, but my mind wasn't. So it was different. I was kind of torn, but it felt good again because it was the right time for me and for the program and for our family. So it was kind of one of those things, like my body's getting ready to do it, but my mind is like, wait a minute, calm down, dude. You don't need to do all that. You're done, you know, in that case. And then, you know, I think obviously I knew because I had done all the planning for training camp and everything all the way through the spring. You know, that first week when I knew, you know, as it was going on that I wasn't there, it was hard. You know, it was because it was really hard. It was the first time for me not having football since, you know, really second grade. So that was difficult. I knew if I could get through that first week, then the weeks after that would get easier for me. And I think, you know, my wife and kids have helped me through that as well.
What do you miss about it?
I think just the day-to-day connection with young people. You know, we were talking, you know, off air about teenage suicide, and people don't realize it's at an all-time high. And I think young people need direction and help more than ever. That's always why I initially got into coaching, was because I remember what it was like when I was a young person going through and struggling with a lot, and to be able to rely on a high school football coach and coaches and a college football coach and coaches was just really nice. So again, that's the part, I think the daily connection with young people and coaches and the sport itself is what I miss the most. And it's funny, it's not so much the football, to be honest with you, which I thought it would be. It's more the connections with people. You know, that's been different for me, but that's the part I probably miss the most.
When I talk with coaches, Division I, some Division II, but the higher divisions, about how life has changed with NIL and the transfer portal, yeah, you get a lot back, and it's a completely different animal. And I think we're seeing that, and we're seeing a transition of high-level coaches in basketball and football. Had things changed for you? Like, were you finding yourself your last few years dealing with things that 10, 15 years ago just weren't things on your radar?
Yes, I think so. You know, I think the pressure to win, you know, has become so great, and the pressure to win at all costs. That was just something I was never interested in. That's just not me. I was talking, you know, a little bit more the other day with somebody, and I heard Nick Saban mention it, because now I watch Game Day, which I never did before, about a transactional leader and a transformational leader. I got into coaching because I want to be a transformational leader. I wanted to help people. I wanted to help young people. I wanted to help coaches. I wanted to that's just my nature. And everything now has changed more into transactional wins, losses, money, you know, bottom line. I don't think, for the better, to be honest with you. And I started to see it happen at Division III. I mean, even at Rowan, where, you know, now there was more pressure to win. And again, I'm a competitive person by nature anyways, you know, so I don't think that's something you need to put on somebody. I think their innate inner self to compete, do well, win, I think that's the drive that makes people successful. All these external pressures just, I think, are just really hard. And I started to see that at Rowan, and I started to feel that. And then I started to see the players change a little bit where, you know, what can you do for me besides that? You know, and you're like, well, wait a minute, you're here to kind of get an education. You know, you're here to find out who you are and make that next step. Like, isn't that enough? And I think that's starting to change where it wasn't, even at the Division III level. And that's where I was like, you know, I think made the decision for me a little bit easier, because that's nothing of what I'm about. I'm not a transactional person, never been driven by money, been driven by success, been driven by working hard, discipline, all those things. But I think all those external things now with social media and everything that goes on is just, I feel for coaches, especially college football coaches, with the pressures that are now put on them that are just extraordinary. And again, I think that's kind of changed, and I think it's made the players and the student athletes change too, in that they're always looking for something maybe transactional more than transformational, which to me, that's not what I'm about.
So now let's go back in time. You grew up in Connecticut?
Yes, I did. Before that, the South Shore of Boston, though.
Okay.
Massachusetts. Yeah, I was born in Springfield, Mass., raised on the South Shore of Boston, Scituate, Marshfield, Mass., and then we moved to Connecticut in my later years.
Sports, everything growing up?
Yeah, it was everything to me. My dad was my first football coach. He introduced me to Eagle pads, which were the first set of shoulder pads he bought me in second grade. He was my first football coach. I think his passion for sports kind of permeated through our family a little bit, and it was just vitally important. Again, so, you know, it was baseball, football, you know, wrestling, soccer. Like, you know, I remember growing up in the streets of the neighborhood we lived in, you know, during the wintertime, you're watching Bruin hockey and you're playing street hockey. In the fall, you know, you're watching the Patriots play and you're playing tackle football in the middle of the, you know, circle of the neighborhood on the grass. And then come the spring, you know, you're playing wiffle ball and baseball and you're playing baseball. So sports was always something in our household and family that was really important. And I remember even, you know, with my grandparents going to their house for holidays with my uncles and my cousins and all of us playing whatever sport it was, basketball, baseball, wiffle ball. It was just always something that was important, I think, in the Accorsi family, and was brought up in our family as well.
When did football emerge to the top for you?
It was like second grade. Like, it was
right away.
Yeah,
like, you played everything, but
yeah,
football was,
like, again, it was just different for me. I liked the contact. I liked the competitive nature. I liked the rough sport that it was. You know, my dad did coach us in baseball and football, not so much basketball. But it was just something different about football for me, just the nature of it and the sport itself. Just, I really enjoyed, and you know, again, that contact part. It's you know, it's kind of a sport different than any other. You know, you got to be a different dude to play football. And for me, it was football right away. Baseball was close, but football for me right away.
What position did you play?
So my dad made me be an offensive lineman in second grade. I was pretty quick. So the times I got the ball, I was fairly successful. But my dad was like, no, 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 no. You're going to be a guard. And I'm like, one of those guys, Dad? And he was like, listen, you need to understand the importance of football and really where it all starts. On the offensive and defensive lines. And so it was offensive guard, and I hated it, but I was so appreciative because it made me really realize how important it was up front to be successful for a football team. But, you know, some of the other assistant coaches on my dad's staff would be like, well, no, we're going to put Jay in at running back this play. So I had a chance, but yeah, that was kind of where I started. And then, you know, running back, DB through high school and college.
When did you figure you were going to be able to play in college? You went to Nichols, right?
Yes, I did. I went to a small high school, Summers High School in Connecticut. My brother and sister still live in town. My brother's kids are very successful in the school district. Give a shout out to them for the Summer Spartans. You know, small high school football, it had just started a couple years when I was in junior high that the varsity team started. And again, you know, it was a small school, fairly successful for the most part. But it was one of those things you never came off the field. You know, you're at a small high school. It was not two platoon. Like, I kicked, I punted, I was running the ball, I was playing defense, I was doing everything. And that's kind of where it all honed the skills of being able to play there. And I wrestled because my football coach was a wrestling coach. And he's like, well, Jay, you're a tough kid. I want you to wrestle. So at one minute, he's got me drinking these crazy milkshakes and bananas to gain weight. Then the next minute, I'm in this sauna room with a silver suit, like sweating everything. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here? And I think to this day, my metabolism is messed up from that. And then it was baseball. That was my second love. That was really what my brother was really good at. He went on to play at UConn. But, you know, playing three sports in high school at a small school, you know, you become a big deal if you're fairly successful. But football, I knew that's where I wanted to go and take it in college. Broke my leg my senior year in high school. Pretty bad fracture, fibia, tibia. Back in the day, they didn't do screws or plates. You're kind of on the table and they take an x-ray and they go, all right, we got to move your leg this way. And you scream. You know, they're like, all right, let's take an x-ray. They take an x-ray. Oh, no, we got to move your leg this way. And you're like, oh, my God. So that was hard overcoming that. But I definitely wanted to play college football. You know, I had some looks at some Division IIs and 1AAs. I was an okay player from a small school, but I knew it was probably going to be Division III where I could kind of get it out of my system, and kind of found Nichols, great small business school right outside of Worcester, Mass., kind of fell upon it, and it was four, you know, phenomenal years for me.
Did you play guard in college?
No, I was running back.
Okay.
Yeah, I had finally broken away from my dad, and people were able to let me run with the ball. So I was a quarterback my freshman year in high school because we ran the option. And then I was transitioned to running back. And so I played running back in like monster back or outside linebacker, rover, whatever it was. And then when I went to Nichols, it was running back. And it was just something about carrying the ball. You know, I wasn't fast. You know, I wasn't big. You know, I was just your blue-collar kid that was going to always get you good yardage. And it was a great experience. Nichols had had some success in the 70s. I played for Coach Mike Vendetti, a legend there. And it was a phenomenal experience for me. And we were close to Holy Cross. So Holy Cross was really good with Gordy Lockbaum at the time. And then the BC with Doug Flutie. So my 4 years of college, I went and watched Holy Cross play BC. Two times at, you know, at Holy Cross, and then two times at Foxborough Stadium, which now is Gillette and everything. But so that was pretty cool being in the middle of like college football back in the day when it was probably the epicenter, right? I would imagine at the time. And it was just a great experience. And lo and behold, I ended up at Rowan across the street from where Gordy Lockbaum went to high school,
yep,
which was really interesting. So it was just a great time for football and especially college football in that area, Central Mass, where I was, because of that BC Holy Cross. And it was just spectacular times.
What would you say from your playing days in college, what is your top accomplishment? I don't mean best memory. I mean, what is the thing like if you were putting your football playing resume out, what's the first bullet point?
That I was captain my senior year. I think there's something special about being elected captain. Again, I don't remember if it was the coaches or the players. I don't remember. But, you know, being co-captain with Dennis Bruning, you know, good buddy of mine, linebacker from Randolph, Mass., a tough dude. That was really important, you know, because it just kind of made me feel like I kind of got there and I succeeded, you know, and that was important for me. I had been a captain in high school for football, and to be captain in college, I think for me was just a big deal. That's what I'm most proud of, is that I was captain my senior year in college.
Did you always figure you were going to coach?
No, you know, I didn't. Right out of college, I worked for Mobile Oil Corporation in Valley Forge, not far from here, for a while, making a ton of money. I hated it.
What were you doing?
I was like a manager trainee as the liaison between Mobile Oil Corporation and the local dealers. When I had a quart of oil thrown at me and ruined my couple hundred dollar suit and I had to eat it and take it from the dealer, I was like, no, this isn't me. I'm not going to be the face of corporate America and have some guy be upset and spray me with oil. Like, that didn't go over that well that day. Went on to work for Roadway Express, actually RPS, their trucking company, small package delivery back in the day. Again, making a ton of money. I hated it. You know, I needed to do something different. My brother at UConn, his roommate was the stepson of the new football coach at Nichols, where I had played and gone. And lo and behold, I found myself interviewing for a part-time football job with Jack Charney at Nichols College a couple years after graduating. And then that's kind of how it all just kind of all snowballed for me.
Were you a position coach at first?
Yes. I think I was maybe quarterbacks the first year, or quarterbacks and running backs. You know, he had been a longtime assistant at Brown University and was just so knowledgeable in the sport of football. I was blessed at the start of my career to be around somebody that was just so knowledgeable in recruiting. And, you know, he was at Brown, and so it was Ivy League football. And, I was just really blessed. And then I got to know the baseball coach, who was the sports information director, Bob Flannery. He hired me as an assistant baseball coach. Then the AD hired me to be recruiting coordinator. I ended up moving back into one of the dorms, new dorm, where I was a dorm resident assistant. Then I became a dorm director. And then I was working for my father and uncles in Hartford after leaving RPS to get into coaching at City Beef Corporation. It was a company my grandfather had started that my father and uncles and aunt. And it was the old Rocky movie, right? That's what I tell people. When what was Rocky's real job besides, you know, being a muscle man? It was unloading and loading beef and working in a meat plant. That's what I did all growing up. And it was an awesome experience, you know, every day to see my grandfather, my father, my uncles, and my aunt in a family business working really hard. It was hard work. I remember my father and uncles and grandfather, you know, I'd be schlepping beef all day, Jay, so get an education, get a degree. But that was an awesome experience. And at the time, I was going back to school part-time to work on a degree to try to teach and coach. And at the same time, living in the dorm as the dorm director in charge of RAs and then baseball and football coach. So it all kind of fell into place for me. I was very fortunate.
Tough to give up the nice coin you were making those first couple jobs. Like, you don't like it and all, but it's easy to get used to those paychecks.
I can't say what my father said to me at the time. he's like, "You're going to what?" And I'm like, "Dad, I want to coach." He's like, "All that money we paid it." You know, Nichols was an expensive, small private school. And, you know, we were a blue-collar family. So, you know, I felt bad for my brother and sister. I probably took all the money for my education, over maybe options they had. And, you know, he looked – I can't say what he said. Yet, all of a sudden, now I become an assistant coach. I became head coach. He's the first one telling everybody, "You know what my son does? He's head football coach at Rowan." And I look at him like, "Dad, you were the one, like, cursing me out. Like, I changed professions. Like, what, are you killing me?" Yeah, but it was really cool and really neat. But, you know, I would – you know, I'd wake up. I'd go into work at 11 o'clock, at 12 o'clock at night. I'd work till 1 or 2 in the afternoon. I'd drive to Nichols. I'd coach. You know, I'd do administrative things. I ended up getting one of my master's degrees for the athletic director there, Tom Cafaro, who was a great lacrosse player at West Point. And I ended up getting one of my master's degrees there while I was doing it. So it was a lot. But, yeah, giving up the money, it was hard. Luckily, I saved a lot early, and then I spent a lot of it as I was going through the process. So I was just very fortunate that a lot of things clicked for me.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Jay Accorsi in just a few moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with former Rowan University head football coach Jay Accorsi.
As a coach, do you remember the first time you did something, made a connection where you realized something you did worked, or you helped the light go on for a kid for something? And what, if you do specifically remember that, what was that like, that feeling?
Yeah, and it had to be back at Nichols. You know, two come in mind. You know, one is not related to a player. One was related to an older coach. I remember, like, really chewing out this player in practice really bad. And I remember the older coach, you know, been retired, and, you know, he was in his 60s, I'd imagine, and linebacker coach, rough and tumble guy. And he kind of pulled me aside, and he said, Jay, listen, he goes, remember, if it weren't for the student athletes, like, you'd have to go get, like, a real job. He goes, I know you're competitive, and I know you want to correct the player, but remember why you're here. That was that big picture moment I think I got from a really experienced older coach that really helped me and put it in perspective. And I never did that to a player again. And I don't think it was malicious on my intent. It was just I kind of went way over
the competitiveness. Yeah. Yeah,
and he's like, Jay, listen, like, if it's not for them, like, you got to get a real job. Like, you got to make this work. The other would be there was a quarterback battle at Nichols at the time, and there was a transfer in from, I think, BU or BC. Really, you know, good-looking kid, smooth, calm, and collect, you know, really talented, but didn't work really hard. There was another kid from, like, West Haven, Italian kid, really hard-working. And I remember telling him, I think he was ready to leave or quit or whatever because he didn't think he was getting a fair shake from the other quarterback. And then I could see it. And I said, yo, I said, just hang in there. Your time's going to come. The other quarterback ended up quitting and leaving. And then this other quarterback ended up taking us to a pretty good year that year and then the following year. And I remember saying, Coach, thanks so much for talking me out of leaving. He goes, I don't know who I would be if I had quit and left. I don't know what if it had occurred. And that was kind of that light bulb moment for me. Like, it's a bigger picture thing, you know, than anything.
So what's the road, the door that opens that gets you to Rowan?
So honestly, I sweet talked a student worker, Tejal Patel. I still remember her name. And she was a student worker in the office at Rowan. And I kind of, you know, hey, how are you? And it was a GA position, you know, working quarterback, Strickland or Casey Keeler. And I'm like, how do I get a connection? A couple of good friends of mine from college lived in the area. One was actually in the business school getting his MBA, and that's what I wanted to do, was go back and get my MBA at Rowan. So we had been up there a couple of times with my fiance and my wife-to-be, driven around, saw the school, and, you know, that was the talk with Mr. Rowan's donation, and Rowan was just getting ready to explode, and I really wanted a change from Nichols. I had just finished kind of my one master's degree. I'm like, I need to do something different. And sure enough, I started talking with Tejal and got Casey's direct line. And he go, Rowan football, pick it up. And I go, hey, coach, how are you? And he's like, who's this? And I'm like, this is Jay Corse. He goes, how do you keep getting my number? You know, and I think that impressed him enough that I was persistent enough to do that. So I had kind of gone through Dora Marino, the old secretary, and she's like, oh, well, I'll give him a message. Oh, no, you can't talk to him. Ah. And then I somehow got Tejal answering the phone, and, you know, I'm a grad student, and she was in the MBA program and this and that, and I kind of got my way to get his phone. I'm like, you know, I always call. I can never get him. I know I leave messages. I know he's busy. I just really want to talk with him. And she's like, all right, well, I'm giving you the number, but I'm not going to, you know, you can't tell anybody. And sure enough, I did. I was persistent with Casey, and he's like, all right, well, you know, you might as well come in and interview. And I remember going up there. It was July. He was running his football camps. I'm in a three-piece blue suit, 90-degree desert heat on Glassboro's campus, interviewed. And I'm like, well, I haven't gotten in the program yet, and I don't know how I'm going to swing it. And I'm engaged to be married, but my fiance's all for this. And he's like, listen, I'll call you back in a couple of days, but I think the job is yours. Calls me back. I threw all the stuff. Now, I drove a Chrysler 5th Ave because, again, remember, I was making a lot of money. I couldn't unload the car because I had the payments. So I had this big, fancy old man's car that my wife always said I had. But it was nice because I could pile everything in it. I piled all my belongings and drove up to Rowan.
What's it like when you start at Rowan? Because they are a very good program.
Yeah, I didn't really know much about the national scene, so I had heard it was pretty good. And then my college friend, Lou Testa, you know, basically was going to the MBA program here, kind of, you know, the industrialist just gave him a ton of money and the name. And he goes, their football's like crazy good. I went to a game and they're like crazy. So I did my research and I saw obviously John Bunning really took the program to prominence, left, and then Casey Keeler was the head coach. I'm like, wow, I'm kind of walking into the right place at the right time. And it was just fortunate. You know, I lived in a dorm room with another fellow GA, Bobby Ray Harris. He was undergrad finishing, but he was still kind of like a GA. I was a GA taking class. I hadn't been accepted into the MBA program. I didn't have two of the requirements undergrad. So I took two undergrad courses and three graduate courses. You know, I was kind of making it work. But I remember walking out to the, you know, I remember the first staff meeting, you know, and there's like, and I come from Nichols, you know, there was like, what, five of us, six of us. And now I go into Rowan and there's a staff of like 15 coaches and, you know, all resumes. And I'm like, whoa. And then I see some of the players and I'm like, whoa, this is different. And it was just, it was a special time on the Rowan campus in the 90s. You know, basketball was making the national runs every year. Football, you know, we went to five Stag Bowls. Like it was just, the place was hopping. And athletics, I think, was probably at its peak. And it was just a great environment to be in. You know, I hit it off with the athletic directors and Ted Kirshner and Joy Solomon because they were male and female athletic directors. And then Joy ended up taking over as athletic director and, you know, got to know all the coaches. And I was just kind of really in awe. I'm like, wow, this is Division III. Yeah, I went from Nichols where it was 1,100 students to now a Glassboro campus, which, you know, was 12, 13,000, but to me that was huge, not like the 20-something thousand we are now. And it was just different. And the football was like, whoa, where did that guy come from? Nebraska. Where did that guy come from? You know, Florida. Oh, where did that guy come from? Temple. Where did that? And I'm like, holy smokes. Like, those teams were different back in the day.
Did it change how you coach?
I think it did because I had to improve my coaching. Like, you were coaching different high-level athletes now, and you needed to step up your game. And I was very fortunate because I befriended, you know, a lot of the coaches on KC's staff that were able to kind of teach me the ropes and learn. Again, I was still a GA, but going to clinics, going to pro camps, you know, going to different places just opened my eyes up. But I knew I needed to do it because the athletes and the level was so high. I needed to make sure that I was, you know, worthy of being there, if that makes any sense. So I just really learned from some really good coaches early on. I got to really work the craft, you know, and I got to make sure that I'm coaching these players as high as possibly I can.
How much did your experience growing up as a player, wrestling, baseball, playing all these different sports, did it help you in coaching as maybe you could translate stuff or say, you know, hey, you used to wrestle in high school. Try this when you're rushing the pass or stuff like that. Like, did it help at all or not really?
Yeah, I think I think the more versatile you are, I think the better it makes you just as an athlete in general. Obviously, wrestling has a great impact on the sport of football, especially with the guys up front, offensive and defensive line, because of their hand movement. You know, you don't think of that. It's really their hands and their feet, and they learn that in wrestling. You know, baseball with the, you know, the throwing the baseball, catching the baseball, hitting a baseball, the innate parts of it. That's kind of like a, you know, a quarterback and a receiver. You know, he's throwing the ball and then somebody's trying to catch it, not hit it, but catch it. So I think that cross training helps you be more versatile just as an athlete. And again, look at today. All the great quarterbacks are just so athletic because they can do so many different skills. I think all players. And I think that, yes, it does. It helps you in thinking outside the box and thinking about, you know, different things in terms of just not the brute of football and the strength of it, but the speed, the agility, the athleticism, being able to do a lot of different things. I think a lot of them cross-train. I know our wide receiver coach, Felton Jones, had a bag of tennis balls. And I'm like, Felton, what are you doing? He goes, hand-eye coordination. And he would throw tennis balls. He goes, listen, if they can catch a tennis ball and me throwing it at full speed, they're going to catch a football. And I never thought of it that way, you know, that cross-training to use different sports, wrestling. Phil Petit, our defensive line coach for a long time, was really good about hand combat and hand and foot movement and body movement. And a lot of that was wrestling, you know. So, yes, I think the more versatile you are in a lot of different areas, it helps you hone your craft to get the most out of the athletes that you can.
So you spent, I think it's about 8 years as an assistant with Casey Keeler.
Yeah,
so
as a GA the first year. His assistant coach left. He hired an assistant coach, and then that coach never made it to training camp. So I was like an emergency hire. And I was lucky. You know, I was just kind of right place, right time. I was still on the offensive side that first year to help with the offense. But I think he knew he really wanted a defensive person because, again, full-time, it was just him and GAs and one full-time. So there was only really four people. Now, all of a sudden, it was he and I on the offensive side, and the defensive staff was all part-time. And I think deep down, he's like, listen, I got to – you know. So went back through the cycle the year after, you know, and I had to fight for the job and ended up getting it. And then he ended up hiring two defensive coaches, Ike Smith and Phil Petit. Ike Smith, a longtime teacher in the Cherry Hill School District, had two stints being coordinator for John and Casey, and then Phil Petit, a longtime coach in the area. So I was very fortunate when I moved to defense. I learned from two coaches that were extraordinary and exceptional. And again, you know, that ability to step out of the box and learn. So I was very fortunate that I was right place, right time. Things kind of happened, and then I was able to learn on the defensive side from, you know, some really great coaches. And it was just a matter of going out and learning. You know, I'll never forget, Ike took us, we were at Frostburg State, and the Redskins were at training camp. And it's Phil and Ike and myself. And they did a coach in residence where you would drive and go to the college, and they'd put you up in the dorm with the players. You know, you could eat the training table, everything else. It wasn't as secretive and as it is now. And I remember, you know, Darryl Green, probably the all-time one of the greatest defensive backs ever. And I remember being on the field, 90-degree heat, with Ike and Darryl Green talking about the difference between T-stopping and pedaling out, two different ways to stop and come out of breaks. And I'm like, here I am, 90-degree heat in August, with probably the all-time best defensive back ever, a phenomenal coach I'm lurking for, Ike Smith. And here we are, like an hour after practice, breaking down the T-stop and the pedal out. And I think that I was very fortunate, right place, right time, to learn a lot of things to get myself in a position to be able to stay at Rowan, you know, and kind of excel a little bit under Casey.
So Casey Keeler goes to Delaware in 2002, and that's when you take over at Rowan. Were you starting to think about being a head coach prior to Casey's departure? Like, was it something maybe a few years earlier you felt like, I'm ready if the right opportunity comes? Or was it, oh, Casey's leap? Oh, well, that's interesting. Now maybe I can do this. How did it come together?
Yeah, you know, I owe Casey Keeler a lot. The best thing about Casey, and you can ask anybody on his staffs, he let you coach and he let you do your thing. And so, again, I was a young GA and I was coaching the quarterbacks under Casey. So he was able to see me firsthand, you know, work with Eddie Hessen, the quarterback. Eddie didn't need a lot, believe me, by the time I got there. I was just kind of like, oh, Eddie, pick your elbow up a little bit. Oh, okay, thanks, coach, you know. But he just let you coach. And that was just, I remember everybody saying, wow, he let you coach, you know, because, you know, at the time, a head coach kind of wants to do everything himself, you know. And that was really interesting to let him do that. And I think he prepared me for that. He let me do a lot of things, you know, and he'd always say, hey, listen, I'm Coach A, and if I'm not here, Coach B, Coach Corsi, he's in charge. So we're kind of like co-head coach. And he was really good with his staff about that. So I learned how to do everything, you know, from day one all the way through. And he gave you the ability to do that. I remember he said, listen, you know, are you interested in being a head coach? And I said, yeah, Case, I am. He goes, you got to go interview, you know. And he goes, you got to put yourself out there and you got to get those experiences. I don't think he wanted to lose me, but at the same time, he knew kind of where my trajectory was. You know, his goal was always be the head coach of the University of Delaware. He had always said that. You know, I'm never leaving Rowan unless I'm going to UD. He goes, that's, you know, the only place I'm going to. So I had first interviewed at Nichols, and it was my first interview for a head job, and I was not prepared. It was my alma mater. I had been off at Rowan for a few years. I think because of the success of Rowan, it got my foot in the door. I knew the AD because I worked for him, and I did not do well. I interviewed and I thought I did well, but I didn't, and I didn't get it. And I remember calling the AD, and I remember, like, you know, Tom, what did I? He goes, Jay, listen. He goes, there's a lot you got to do to be prepared. He goes, listen, I'm going to give you or tell you a lot of the material a lot of the coaches gave. He goes, because I think I owe that to you because I had done one of my master's degrees with him. And he said, listen, there's a lot. And I remember, you know, he gave me a lot of the material that some of the coaches had given. I looked, I'm like, whoa, I wasn't even close. And then the next few years, I had interviewed William Patterson, Buff State, and I got really close. And then I was kind of like, you know, I'm not having any luck, you know. But all those experiences prepared me for when Casey left, because it was a national search. And Joy Solomon, the athletic director at the time, basically did a national search. And I'm happy that was done, because I wanted to be compared against everybody in the country. I just didn't want to get it because I was there. And lo and behold, I ended up getting it. I just, those experiences helped me to fight and get the job at Rowan at the time.
Now, you talk about Casey letting you do everything and you really had a feel. But once you're the guy in the seat, were there what were there things that were eye-opening what you had to do?
It's night and day. I think if you talk to any coach, especially a football coach, they'll tell you. I mean, you know, one day you're an assistant and the next day your world completely changes. Mine did too. So, you know, it's all spring. The candidates were coming on campus. I had to leave the days they were on campus. I was kind of interim. I didn't get the tag, but I was kind of running the program from when Casey left. I want to say maybe in February. Interviewed, the process went through, and then I'll never forget, it was April 1st. And, you know, no decision had been made, and everybody's kind of wondering. Joy pulled me in her office and said, listen, you need to go meet Drew Calandrella. You didn't in the process. Most of the other candidates did. You need to speak to my boss, the vice president, dean of students. And well, little did I know, when I left, she had a conversation with me and then I left. They spoke on the phone and he goes, what do you want to do? And she's like, I want to hire him. He goes, okay, so this is a formality. She goes, I think so, but you see. I was in his office maybe 10 minutes. He goes, okay, Jay, that's good. You know, a couple of questions, this and that, and I left. Well, he called her back and said, offer him the job. I go back in her office. Now it's April 1st. My wife's pregnant with our third child, and it was probably the most stressful time of my life. You're in a program, you're running it, you're not the head coach, you're trying to keep it afloat, you're recruiting, you're doing everything, and I really wanted it. Like, I got the taste from the other interviews, but I really wanted it. So we sit down, she looks, and she goes, so what do you think? And I'm just, like, exhausted at this point. I go, well, I think I could be the head football coach here and be successful. She goes, guess what? I go, what? She goes, your head coach. And I looked at her, and then she goes, April Fools. And I went, like my world, my heart went like up and down. And you just had to know Joy. I love her to death. And she was phenomenal to work for. And I'm like, she goes, I'm just kidding. Get up. Come give me a hug. And I was like, just, I was shot. And that was just Joy, you know, and probably one of the bigger decisions she had to make. You know, when John Giannini left, Joe Cassidy kind of took over as basketball coach. You know, John had gotten the program up to national prominence. Casey did. You know, we go to 5 national championships. So this was her first big kind of hire, I think. So I think it was stressful for her, too. And I'll just never forget her saying that. And then we hugged and everything else, and then it just kind of went from. The press conference is the next day, April 2nd. She goes, listen, we're doing a press conference. We're doing it in the stadium. I'm not telling anybody you have the job. She goes, you deserve the press conference, everything else. And I just love that about Joy, because she was really good about the people things. You know, I remember one of the articles saying, you know, they were waiting for like the great Wizard of Oz to walk down with Joy into the stadium and be introduced as the football coach. And it was only like little Jay Acorsi. And I'll never forget. So we're at the press conference. My wife's pregnant with my third child, a boy, and she's like having stomach and doesn't tell me. So we're doing the press conference. It's a big deal, blah, blah. So she leaves, and I have my two girls with me, and I go back home. Well, the next day, we're in the hospital that night. My son's born the next day, April 3rd. So I get the job April 1st. I do the press conference April 2nd. April 3rd, I'm in the hospital, and my son's born. And I just remember my phone exploding. And it was like all of a sudden you went from like nobody to like a star. And the world just completely changed. And that was different for me. And there was, you know, one quick story. I had made a promise to be a speaker at the Glassboro Youth Football Midget Association. George Johnson, all his kids played in the NFL, great guys since passed. And I got really close with them. We did a lot with the youth football and everything else. So I had made the commitment, completely forgot about it. So it's like, you know, I get the job in April. Their banquet's like in May or June. I miss it. So I get a call from Joe Hershaff, longtime Paulsboro guy, and he goes, coach. I go, yeah. He goes, did you forget something this weekend? I'm like, no, Joe. Like, and I was just overwhelmed. I'm like, no, Joe. He goes, the Glassboro Youth Football Banquet, you're supposed to be the guest speaker. I went, oh, my God. He goes, don't worry about it. I jumped in and filled in for you. He goes, I know you're really busy. You just had a baby boy. You got the job, everything else. And I just learned something then that I was always going to write everything down, and I was never going to let something like that. I think I spoke at the Glassboro Midget Youth Banquet like the next 15 years, and I felt horrible. But your world changes. You know, you go from being in charge of yourself and a family and a position group or a defense to all of a sudden now in charge of four budgets and 110 players and 15 coaches. And it's just something they never prepare you for. And it's hard.
How long did it take before you felt like you got your arms around it?
Oh, man. I don't know if you ever do, just because so many things change, you know, and in the course of 22 years. You know, football changes, people change, an institution changes. I don't know if you ever – I think that's the part when I look at coaches now, you can see it. Like, there's just so much uncertainty and so much they don't control that you always want to try to control, but you can never control everything. So I don't know if you ever get your arms fully around it. You know, probably after the first couple of years you feel – but again, Casey had prepared me for it. So I was probably, you know, prepared than most. I had interviewed for some jobs, so I had my theory. I had, you know, kind of what I wanted to do, everything down. Now it was just a matter of enacting it. But I don't know if you ever feel comfortable with your arms around it all, because there's just so much that goes into it. But a couple of years, you start to, okay, I think I can survive.
Time for another break on One-on-One. More with Jay Accorsi coming up. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now let's get back and continue our conversation on One-on-One with Matt Leon with former Rowan University head football coach Jay Accorsi.
I just realized I don't think I've ever asked a football coach this. I've asked a lot of basketball coaches. The dynamic in basketball when you move up the one seat, and it's huge because things. You know, it's not obviously a seat. Game day specific, when you take over as a head coach, is that a lot to get your arms around as far as responsibility with the officials, with time and timeouts and stuff like that? Like, is that a lot to process and make sure you've got everything in the bag, you know, game in and game out?
Yes, it is. But I think there's a lot of ways you can overcome that. Again, I go back to my experience with Casey. Casey Keeler was great in letting his coaches coach. Casey Keeler was great in letting the players play, the coaches coach, but stepping in when he wanted it a certain way and when he wanted things done a certain way. But, you know, 110 players, you know, a football game of, I don't know, 100 and something plays, 11 players are out there. Just do the math. Like, it's impossible. Again, I think Casey helped me by preparing me, and I always watched him, you know. And when he spoke to the officials pregame, hey, Case, what'd you do? You know, afterwards, I didn't bother him then, but like, hey, what's it like? You know, and he would always have, you know, a piece of paper or something with him with notes of things he wanted to go over, you know. So I was always prepared, always had notes, always had something. So again, I think the first couple of years, you know, I'm probably reading off a sheet to the officials and they're like, what's this guy doing? But after a while, you get used to it. I think the other part about the game day decision is you got to trust your coaches and your players. For me, game day was the easiest part of my job. It was getting everybody ready for game day, which was the hardest part of the job. For me, it was easy. You know, if my offensive coordinator, he knew what I wanted, we were prepared, defense coordinator, special teams. If I was one of those things, then I was. But it was just come game day, I was fine. It was everything else leading up to kickoff that was just excruciating. Once the kickoff goes, like, it's the game. Like, it just goes how it is. I always tried to be there for the coaches, prepared in their mind, and I'd always try to be four or five plays ahead just for my own purpose. You know, timeouts, I had them, you know, on a sheet, and I knew when I had one or two or three, when to use them, how to do it. I always tried to make sure the officials know, listen, I'm not going to be that lunatic screaming, I need a timeout when you're not ready. I always wanted to be prepared to let them know. So I think when officials did our game, they were at ease because I was always prepared for the game. I was never going to surprise them. I never screamed at them. I never yelled at them. I never did obscenities at them. That just, one, wasn't my style, but I didn't think that was the way it is. My goal was, while the craziness of a football game's going on, you could look at me and go, in God's name, what is he doing? He's just standing there calm and collect. That permeates to your players, and that permeates to your coaches. I think the last couple of years, some of our wins, you know, with onside kick and Hail Mary pass and last second field goal and everything else, that comes from your players knowing that you're prepared and you're calm and collected. And I remember Casey always saying, you know, when, you know, the craziness hitting the fan, somebody's got to be in control. That's what I always wanted to be. And I think I wanted our coaches to know that, you know, and that they had their faith in me and their decisions and what they make, you know, and what they want to do, and the players too. So game day for me was easy. Once kickoff, I'm like, okay, we're good. It was getting to game day with all the preparation that was the hardest part.
You won a ton of NJAC titles, made, I think it was 7 appearances in the NCAA playoffs. What do you think was your best coaching job?
You know, the years we didn't have all that. You know, and again, you know, I'm fortunate. I can only put on one hand a couple of years we had losing seasons. Those are hard, you know. I never forget my first, I think 4-6. And I was devastated. And I remember walking in to see Joy, the athletic director. I'm like, you know, should I step down? Like, am I not the right person for this? And she's like, are you kidding me? What are you talking about? She's like, there's so many other things that you're doing, you know, and that's put it in perspective for me. Those are the hard years, you know, the couple years we didn't. Those, I think, were my best coaching years for me, because that's where you got to keep everybody on board. You know, that's when players have a tendency to quit. People want to knock your program. You know, everybody has the answer. You know, those are the years that I think I excelled and did my best, because I still tried to keep everything going. 2020 and 2021, probably, I think, my two best years. We didn't have football in 2020. We lost 80-something players. We go into the 2021 season. We hadn't seen our players since really 2019. We didn't practice in the fall of 2020. It was like 40 guys out in a field with no pads on, 2 feet apart. I had to check their temperature all the time. Yet the poor guys had to watch Glassboro High School have a real practice. And they're like, Coach, what's going on? We go into 2021. There's 77 new players that had never played a down of college football. 77. We had 20, you know, I think we had a little right around 100. So it was only 20-something players returning. We were not good. We were bad. That probably was my, I think, best year. And my goal was, I wanted to bring the program back from being basically dead. And it was 2020, 2021. I look back and I'm like, those were probably my greatest jobs that I did to bring it back. You know, 2021, 77 new players. Like, we're getting lambasted by Springfield. The small private schools did a good job of keeping their students during COVID and getting them to practice and do things. We unfortunately didn't, being a state school. Springfield, like, ran the doors off us at home. And I just was like, guys, it's going to take a while. Like, we're okay. We got to head in the right direction. First home game, the guys are warming up after halftime. And I go to the offensive side. They're on the sidelines. And all the guys are tripping over a helmet. And I go to the offensive side. I'm like, what are you guys? They go, Coach, we don't know who's helmet. I'm looking around. So I pick the helmet up and I put it off to the side. No lie. I go down to the defensive end. They're all warming up. There's a freshman without his helmet. So I walk over and I go, yo, so-and-so, where's your helmet? It was like, you know, Jim Belushi in Animal House. He puts his hand on his head, realizes he doesn't have his helmet, and starts bouncing around in circles, like when Belushi was, right? When he's bouncing around, looking around everybody. I go, yo, relax. I go, I just picked your helmet up. It was down the other side. It's over on the bench. Go get it. You know, that, I mean, that's literally, we were going like step one back. So I think my best years were 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023. I think we left a really good program for the current coach, 110 players, deep at every position, competitive. Like, it took a while. And it was really those seniors that were the carryover, right? The COVID seniors in 2020. You know, we were able to keep a bunch into grad school. So 2020, 2021, probably my best years. Not the best years win-loss and conference, everything else, but really wanted to just get the program back, and I think it's back to stay.
As a football coach, I'm curious how much, because one of the things when you hear post-game press conferences, specifically in the NFL, coach will be asked about a play. Well,
I know what happened. I got to look at the film. As the head coach, how different would games look on film from what you saw on the sideline?
Night and day, really. You know, I think because I did it for a long time, I kind of had an idea where to look. But and I'm not giving the coaches the out, but it's the truth. You know, we would always tell our players, film does not lie. You know, that's why at practice we would have drones and cameras and angles and, you know, we'd have 15, you know, I don't, maybe that's exaggerating, but, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 cameras at practice. Everybody's getting filmed all the time. I learned that from Phil Petit and Ike Smith. If it's filmed and on tape, then that's actually what occurred, not what you think occurred, you know. And a lot of times, you know, a head coach, he doesn't really, you know, there's so many things that go on. Until you see the film and know, until I watched the film Saturday night, probably because I'm a crazy man, I didn't really know what transpired. You kind of have an idea, but you don't know. Because there's one little thing that can set a play, a series, and a game different than everything else. And it's just that one little thing. So again, not to give the coaches an out, but you just really don't know. You can guess and think, but again, that's not fair to the coaches and that's not fair to the players. Until you actually see it on film. So as a firm believer, until I see it on film, I don't know. And I always tell the players, and I tell the official too, like, I'm not going to scream at you right now, but when I watch the film, I'm going to know. And if you miss the call and it's clearly there, then I'm going to send it in, you know? But again, that's a hard one, right? Because you're always asked on the spot, well, what happened on that play? I know, I was on the sidelines. Like, I don't know exactly. Maybe my coordinators or coaches up top know better. Maybe the TV replay people know better. Like on the sidelines, you don't get the view everybody else does on TV, so you just don't know. You can guess, but you just don't know.
Once you watch the film, what would be more common? You would feel better about a loss or worse about a win?
You know, it's always the same. Like you watch the, you know, you'd win and then you'd watch the film and go, oh, dear God, how did we win that game? Like we couldn't get out of our own way. And then you'd lose and you're like, how did we lose? Like, we did everything right. Like, what happened? So I think it's always the opposite of what you think it is, you know? That's why, you know, I would always talk to coaches. After a loss, there's no sense being critical. And there's no sense being the tough guy and getting after your players and your coaches. Everybody feels bad. There's no sense doing that. Your job is to build them back up. You know, where the media and, you know, everybody covering the team and everybody else like, oh, you guys stink. You are horrible. Blah, blah, blah. You need to be that intermediate person to tell them, yo, guys, we're not that bad. It's not the end of the world. We're okay. But then on the other side, same thing, right? You play great. You win 55-7. All of a sudden now your guys think like you're Super Bowl bound. And you're like, yo, guys, hold on. Like that team was okay and we did this and that. And like, you know, cool your jets. So I think it's that, you know, tough love, hard thing, you know, both when you win and lose. Your job as the head coach when you lose is to bring everybody back. They feel bad enough. And they certainly don't need to hear from me how bad they were. They're going to hear from everybody else. And then on the other side, when you're that good, like, yo, guys, you're good, but you're not that good. Like, let's put it in perspective. So it's a fine balance. I love watching coaches do press conferences. It's funny. That's kind of what I do now. You know, after the weekend's games, you know, I'll watch Casey at his press conferences. You know, I know Coach Chez, Bob Chesney at JMU, you know, and just had a couple of tough losses. I'll watch the pro guys. I'll watch everybody. That's the part where you really, and I did that early on, to learn kind of how do you maneuver through that world of what everybody else says about your team, but what your team thinks about itself. That means more than anything. And to be able to get rid of that noise this day and age, that's a hard thing. Because the poor kid's hearing from his parents as soon as he gets off the field. I see it at my son's soccer games. Like they get off the field, and all of a sudden a parent's like ripping a kid. I'm like, really? You know, I've learned just hug my kid. I love you, dude. You did great. You know, but that's the part I think that emotional, personal part that you really got to hone in that I think a lot of people have lost and forgotten about.
22 years as the head coach of Rowan. We talked about what you thought were your best years. What are your, when you think of your time as the head coach, what are the first couple memories that come rushing back?
Again, you know, obviously the Stag Bowls, you know, you always got to think of those being on ESPN and, you know, being on TV and people watching you. And that's really cool, you know. And that was, you know, in the 90s when we made that run with some really great teams. And I remember, you know, somebody telling Casey, and I forget who it was, you know, don't forget these times. It's not always like this, you know? And then, you know, all of a sudden it isn't. And then you realize, like, you know, I had it pretty spoiled. It was pretty good. But again, just, you know, the memories, you know, seeing an institution change so dramatically. And my hope is the football program still being competitive through all this change. You know, that's my memories, all the players, all the coaches, all the relationships. That's what I try to remember the most. And that always meant more to me than any winning one, you know, winning, losing, tying, championships. Like I could get people ask me, you know, what's your record? I have no idea what my record is. I really don't. Now, I know it was 22 years because everybody tells me it was 22 years, but I really have no idea. It was all the interpersonal relationships that mean the most. We had a golf tournament in the spring just after I had announced my retirement, and I saw a player I hadn't seen in a long time. And he struggled while he was there, but he finished school and ended up not finishing football. Big guy. Gave me a big hug, squeezed the death out of me. And he goes, Coach, thanks for everything. He goes, I don't know where I'd be today if it wasn't for you. He goes, I know I didn't handle it well. I know you're really hard on me. I know you're really upset with me at times. He goes, I know you probably didn't think I made it. He goes, I'm married. I'm expecting my first child. He goes, Coach, thanks. To me, that's what it was always about. You know, halftime at a game and an alum grabbing and giving me a hug up at Montclair, you know, or seeing a college teammate show up to a game, you know. To me, that's what it was always about, and that's what all the memories were. And again, understanding, I was a dinosaur. Nobody lasted an institution for 31 years, 22 as head coach, you know. Like, I'm just not that normal person. But I was right place, right time, right institution, right administration, and everything was just kind of really good. And I was very fortunate and blessed.
And for the record, your record was 143-78, which, yeah, is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, that's, you know, that's, again, that's not why I got into it, and that's not why I did it. It was more about the interpersonal relationships and the people that mattered more to me than, you know, anything. And that will always be that part of it. And then, you know, telling the existing team in the spring at the last spring practice that I was stepping down. The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. It really was. But I knew it was the right time and the right thing to do, but was still the hardest. You know, I didn't get through my, I was, you know, bawling my eyes out for the most part. If you ask the current players, they may not even remember what I said. I don't. But that was the hardest thing to walk away. But you got to know when to walk away and when to do the right things.
Final question, kind of going along with that. Someone watched Rowan football, was connected to Rowan football, whatever. What do you hope they took away from your time as head coach?
The greatest compliment would always be, man, your players played hard. Like, holy smokes, you know? I could probably, on one hand, put the number of games we were not in, you know, maybe 3 or 4 or 5. But every other game, the Rowan football program was in it and competed. And that's what I always wanted people to know, was like, when you played Rowan, you were in for a ball game, you know, regardless of anything, that they were going to play hard. And that when somebody left, no matter who it was, they'd be like, wow, that was a good football team. Whether they won or lost, I could care less. If they played as hard as they possibly could and the right way, that mattered to me the most. You know, no penalties or minimal penalties. You know, I know celebration. Again, I know I'm the dinosaur and that's different, but I was just a firm believer. Hey, you score, act like you've been there before, because you have been there before and you're going to be there again. Flip the ball to the official and go celebrate with your teammates. I know that it's not kind of the norm now. Everything's like celebration, but that's what it was. And then when anybody met our players, the greatest compliment I always ever got was, we'd be at an away game overnight. Cortland, Christopher Newport, Linfield, playoffs, Mount Union, no matter where we were, the people, the hotel staff would come and go, Coach, I just got to tell you, your players are the nicest people. Like, oh my God. And I always told the guys, open and close doors, please and thank you. That was always big for me, like those manner things. I'm an old school guy. Like, that was just important, because you never know what relationships or impact you make at that particular time. You always want it to be the best, and you always want people to remember you. You know, the only thing you really own in life is your reputation. Houses, cars, that's just stuff. The only thing you own is your reputation. And if your reputation is a certain way, I just believe that's how it should be. And I was very fortunate. That's what I learned from my parents. You know, we didn't even talk about Coach Wacker, Richard Wacker, the one that started the program at Glassboro State, Rowan. Like, I was so fortunate to know him. Like, he was somebody I leaned on when I got the job, you know, and every day I would think about the conversations. And I miss, you know, not having the conversation with my dad and Coach Wacker, because those were so profound, but that meant more to me. Or, you know, on campus, somebody walk up, you know, a professor or somebody, oh, you're the football coach, right? And you're kind of like, yeah. They're like, I just, you know, so-and-so's in my class. What a wonderful person he is. Like, that meant the world to me, because I think in this world we live in, that gets lost. You know, in this crazy world of what's going on, please, thank you, hello, goodbye, communicating, being nice, you know, holding doors for people. That always meant more to me than anything. So those were the biggest compliments that I always felt really good about, was when somebody said, you know, wow, your players or your player I met or whatever it was, like, they're awesome, coach. Like, that's so great. And that meant more to me than anything. Respected on the field, a good product that was competitive all the time, the right way, and then good people at the same time. I always say, just because you're a great football player doesn't mean you're a great person. Just because you're a great person, you do have a chance to be a great football player. I think the two are connected. But again, that meant the most to me, and I'm hoping that's what people would look back at and say, you know, he did it the right way, and with the right players and the right coaches and the right people. And, you know, I respect and proud of who he was and what he did. That's all I ever wanted.
Jay Corsi, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be out and get up early in the morning and do something, because I'm not used to that. And again, you know, very appreciative for your coverage over the years, Matt, and everybody that covered our program. Very, very appreciative, and thank you.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank former Rowan University head football coach Jay Accorsi for being our guest and coming in studio to chat. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.